Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
Lending quality chat and insightful comment for the 21st century, you're listening to the Midweek Drive.
Time again, as the man said, we're actually into that face-to-face contact, and we've put together another sensational dream team. First of all, hopefully we welcome back to the wonderful Midweek Drive the equally wonderful and astonishing designer who has got credits on Doctor Who, on Red Dwarf, on Fast and Furious. It's Matthew Clark. How are you, Matthew?
Hi, how are you doing? Very good, thank you.
Excellent. Hopefully we've made your dream come true today, Matthew, because you mentioned last week in the show that you were quite keen on, obviously, the Star Trek The Next Generation. So we thought, this week, let's bring on board somebody who knows Mike and Denise Okuda, has worked in all so many ways when it comes to design and Trek. He's the font of all knowledge. It's Larry Nemechek. How are you, Larry?
I'm great, Alex. Thank you.
Excellent. And just joining us, of course, from the joys also of the United States of America, because he's been so sensational and indeed, like yourself, Larry, and yourself, Matthew Clark, has been the recipient of the Robin Pierce Most Valuable Contributors of the Midweek Drive Award. You don't get any cash, but it's the honour. It's the honour of the whole thing. It's the wonderful Stacey Souther. How are you, Stacey?
Hi there. How are you? Good. I'm good.
Excellent. And Stacey, you've moved your location yet again. We have Laurel and Hardy in the background this week, I see.
Yeah, I'm actually at David's, so there's all sorts of odd things all around back there. My collector of, I mean, if you saw this place, you'd be like, there's a lot of odd things in here, but yeah.
Stacey, that's why you're a must for the Midweek Drive. Not only are you an ace director, an ace actor, producer, etc., and indeed Valerie Perrine, best friend and so on, you're back with us, of course, again, and of course keeping the American end up, which continues to actually have a score of 4-0 at present. Well, 4-1. We've got from North Carolina our ace correspondent, Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
Good, hello.
Excellent. And from Wales, of course, but a big fan, because that's why he's awarded, I think. Actually, you've also given the award to Jessica as well. So, in fact, yeah, Robin, you can actually formally say hi to 4 of the recipients, even though they may not
actually,
have known it.
Actually, it's 5, because I've given it to you as well.
Oh, shucks. Just for the benefit of the dear listener, and indeed Larry, Matthew, Stacey, and Jessica, would you like to just explain what the Most Valuable Contributor to the Midweek Drive Award actually is?
Rampant egotism on my part. I listen to one of the shows and I decide who, in my opinion, contributed best to the show that week.
There you are. You see, Matthew,
I sit in judgment in all of you.
I would have put the tux on or something if I'd known.
It's a way forward.
Surprise.
Larry, the latest edition, of course, of Star Trek magazine, Larry Nemechek's A Fistful of Data, but we go into cannon fodder with the classic century notes and the question that actually led to a whole series, a whole article on this. Why is the Kirk era said to be set in the 23rd century and by extension the Picard, Sisko, Janeway era and beyond in the 24th? It's opened up a huge amount of stuff there. But before we come on to that, I just want to actually sort of run this through the whole thing. Jessica, you've started off, thanks to Larry, back in the day when we were in radio studios doing this show, as opposed to doing various other bits and pieces. You started out following the advice, I think, that Larry's been providing for you in terms of what your parents wanted as well, slowly working your way through Star Trek, the original series. Mm-hmm. How has it been going?
Oh, I'm embarrassed to say I have been slacking a little bit with quarantine at school, but I do want to get back onto my Star Trek homework. I want to get back into the world, progress past the Tribbles, who are always a classic, but see some more episodes, so...
Progress past the Tribbles. Well, of course, we did cover Miri, and I believe we got Assignment Earth coming up as well in the not-too-distant future. Matthew, Star Trek and yourself, has it been something which has been a part of you since growing up in the 80s and so on? Was it a case of once you saw those designs on Next Generation, you said, that's for me, that's the work I want to go into?
I mean, yeah, pretty much. I can't remember when I was first introduced to Next Gen. It's probably early 90s. I think it's kind of all shown to you on VHS tapes. Taped off Sky or whatever. So I kind of had a very patchy introduction to it kind of late in the run. But yeah, I mean, just kind of having gone from kind of kids TV basically to that was a bit of a brain breaker kind of in terms of seeing their sets and the scope of it. So yeah, that kind of hooked me really early on. I think I kind of decided at that point, at the age of 11 or 12, that I would one day be a prop maker for a living, which is a weird, people see that show and become astronauts and scientists. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to make the props. But yeah, it was definitely inspiring.
As we said last week, Matthew, without your work on Black Mirror, Fast and Furious 9, Red Dwarf, Bodyguard, Doctor Who, Blinded by the Light, and so on, it would not be the same. It just would not be the same. In fact, I'll put it out there now. If Alex Kurtzman wants to redeem his reputation, he should actually get on the transatlantic phone now and book you, Matthew, to actually join the Trek world. I just put it out there.
Wouldn't that be a dream? That'd be amazing.
The way things are going, there ought to be the jobs.
Exactly. Yeah. This is very true. Stacey, I haven't actually asked you this before, but are you a Star Trek fan? I mean, there's almost an assumption that if you're in the United States and you're not the president, you must be a Star Trek fan. I mean, I know that could be a dangerous sort of thing. That's the current president, by the way, in case people are wondering. Stacey, any thoughts on the Trek series? And do you have any particular favorites?
Well, growing up, in the 70s, I mean, I was born in 72, so I remember being 3-4 years old and seeing the reruns then. So I never was a huge fan, but the original is more my preference, you know. I stick to that, and I just thought it was it was really cool, you know, especially as a young kid. But yeah, I never got into like the Next Generation or any of that, but yeah. I mean, who doesn't like some Captain Kirk, you know?
You know, I've said that. We were just considering on another program, the Gerry Anderson series UFO. And if only we'd actually said, you know, in the words of Commander Freeman's casual sexism at the time, who doesn't like a bit of Captain Kirk? That would have been a different lifetime. So, what the heck? I mean,
William not usually asked from that perspective, but yeah.
Yeah. And Larry, like I think Robin and myself, you've probably been with us since the off, really, in terms of obviously as a young child, probably barely out of diapers, actually watching the original series. You know, clearly you are Dr. Trek. You are the font of knowledge when it comes to Star Trek and so on. What kind of led you to the whole system?
Oh, this is, no, I was not in diapers. I was my ninth grade science teacher, some point during the year with, you know, after school reruns, 4 o'clock on Channel 5, Oklahoma City. One day, long story short, there were two kids, two of her pets and her were goofing around. The upshot of the conversation, and I wandered into the conversation, but the upshot of it was, she said, "Oh, Larry, don't tell me you don't like Star Trek." And I'm like, I don't know. And she's like, "Go home today and start watching." And I did. I actually watched the animated once or twice first before I watched the live.
Oh, yeah,
Yeah, I like to feel that even in an era where, as far as academics are concerned, we are having to wear these particular devices. Yes, it's a face visor, and I'm having to use it because some of our students might have to lip read. Doesn't do a great deal for the audio, but what the hey. It's nice to know that at least as an academic at the University of Lincoln, we're immune from the virus as long as we're wearing the sacred visor. That's the important thing. But allowing for that, I'm still, as Jessica will confirm, with my students saying, "You haven't watched Star Trek? Go home now and watch the action, even if home is in another continent." There we are. Matthew, Star Trek on the National Curriculum, it's a whole new work. But Matthew, have you got any questions you want to put to Larry at this moment about design or indeed Trek in general?
I think kind of out of interest, kind of what's your particular favorite kind of era aesthetic of the show, because obviously it's developed so much, and even the next gen era, it's kind of bled into new ones, is different to the 90s and 2000s stuff. Is there a particular one that really speaks to you?
Yeah, that is a little. I mean, I was a kid, I grew up, you know, we had the original series for 20 years, and then it was great to see the rebirth then and with Next Generation, and then partway through the Next Generation, we moved to LA. I did the Next Generation companion book, and I was really close to it and studied that. And then I didn't do a book on any of the other series, but was certainly around and worked on. I edited a magazine for 8 years, a Star Trek, the official U.S. magazine, and did a lot of projects. So I was close to those. So some of them I've waded through more detail than just, but known people interviewed them all. A lot of designers, Herman Zimmerman and Mike and Rick, and I mean Sternbach and Okuda, they're not Pillar and Berman, but them too. So, and the writers, and I mean the behind the scenes more so even than the actors, and then actors on convention circuit and everything. It's just really hard to, I mean, DS9 had the most amazing cast because they had like 40 or 50, you know, the bench was so deep, and stage actors and all of that, and the Next Gen was so revolutionary, and they were incredible, and Voyager was like the lost potential to me. A lot of people love Janeway now, and they should. That's great. And the Doctor and Seven, all of that. And then Enterprise, always loved the concept when people didn't like the prequel. And I'm like, no, I've wanted a Federation founding series for ages. So it's, you know, and now in the Kurtzman era is good to remind everyone how every one of those old Star Treks, when they were new, had people who weren't on board. So, you know, it's all a lesson. So yeah, I'm just sentimentally with the original series, and intellectually a lot with DS9, and emotionally with Next Generation. So it's kind of hard. You know,
I think that's the same for me, actually.
Thank you.
that whole sort of notion of reflecting on things. Although I must admit, I'm pushed to find, Larry, the notion that people in years to come will say, oh, Lower Decks, what a great animated series that is. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. I think I found one or two critics who've actually said it's okay.
I quite enjoy it. I think it's from the heart. Like it takes the mick out of the show, but in a way that only someone who really loved the show would be able to do. So it kind of feels more like home to me than Picard. And that,
wow,
it kills me to say that. Yeah.
Matthew, we've discovered on the Midweek Drive the third viewer and supporter of Lower Decks. It's amazing.
You've got another one. No, I mean, they're all different. And the people that lump, the people that go, oh, those Kurtzman shows, Discovery and Picard and Lower Decks, whether you're a huge fan or not, I mean, they're all different. A lot of people try to lump them together. But I love Lower Decks. Lower Decks makes me smile. I just think you've got people that are fans doing it. It's obvious. But after 10 years of having, you can do something in the family and it's okay. And when it's outside the family, it's not. And Lower Decks just seems in the family the same way. We've had 10 years of people doing Star Trek memes on Facebook, and all the shit posting and all that kind of thing.
We had a slight glitch there, Larry. I didn't quite hear you. Don't worry. It is British radio, but never mind.
I didn't do that. That's a site. But I mean, you've had a Star Trek humor online for 10 years, and Lower Decks is just kind of like the professionalization of this brand of humor we've had for 10 years. So it feels very much from within the family to me. And they've done an amazing job of visualizing it. And it had some bumpy places maybe in the beginning, but I think the more it goes on, the more it's become more popular here, and more people you see people say, well, I didn't think this would work, but now I'm a fan. But there are a lot of people that it's not their cup of tea, humor wise. So that's fair.
Interesting. Rick and Morty, possibly in Space Robin. I mean, I know that neither of us were necessarily fans of this particular thing. Has this, through the work, the thoughts of Matthew and Larry, has this convinced you we'll give it another try?
Well, not really. I have to... I'd like to ask Larry a question, if I may. Like you, I came to Star Trek when I was at school. The first time it was shown here in the UK, I really wasn't a fan because I just didn't get it. I was 9 years old and I didn't understand why they were doing all the naval terminology. Later on, when I was about 13 or 14, I got it, and I got it big style. And that was in the, early mid 70s. So for years then, we just had the original series and they became almost biblical fables, told and retold, and we loved them. Then the film started, added to it, the Next Generation added to it, slight overlap with, of course, the Deep Space Nine series, kept on adding. Still, we had the films coming out. Then we had a slight overlap with Voyager, and it carried on again with Enterprise, and it seemed Trek overload. Now, we've had a rest for a few years, and all of a sudden we see, the new films with Chris Pine by J.J. Abrams, we have Discovery, we have Picard, we have the Lower Decks. Do you think we are entering another period of just being overwhelmed by maybe too much Trek? And I'm asking this as a fellow diehard Trekkie.
Well, you're not the first to ask that. And I say no, because when you said, I forget how you just now put it, what I call the fallow years of no Star Trek, it wasn't just that, oh, you said we got a rest. Well, a lot of people look at that 12 years as starving, not having a rest. So the other thing was all the prior years, the business model was that, 26 shows a year, 26 episodes a season or a series, as you all would say. What's maddening about the current Trek is, and the Kelvin movies were still just movies. They were only 2 hours every 3 or 4 or even 5 years. So that was hardly overkill. In fact, people were screaming for more, which I knew wasn't going to happen because that's a movie realm. And they didn't make any moves to flesh it out with any kind of a series set in that era, in that timeline. So then you get to the rebirth on TV here but it's all your European seasons. It's all serialized seasons. There's only 10, 12, 13, 15 at most the first year of Discovery. So, and then we're still waiting ahead, this crazy world we live in now where people love those because they're cinema-like, but they're still, like, right now, and we have the pandemic now that's screwing things up too, time-wise. But we're waiting 9 months in a year for just 10 or 12 or 13 episodes. So, no, I don't think people are seeing all these titles stack up, and sometimes your mind goes to, you know, it's 1998 again, and no, it's not. It's 2020. And you get 10 episodes and they're gone. And then you may wait 9 months just for that series. Now they may be back to back, but like right now, they're bumping Lower Decks right up against season 3 of Discovery, but they're not overlapping. They're one after the other, and you shift gears and go to the other show. And then who knows how long there'll be a gap after that. They've run through the gamut now, and the COVID delay there'll be a gap there until whatever the first thing back is, probably the next season of Picard, if they start filming in next couple of months the way they're supposed to. But that'll be these new ones run out in January right after the new year, and then we may have 9 months if they're lucky before the next new Star Trek is out. So no, I don't think that's overkill at all. And even when they've got 6 or 7 shows, if there's any overlap, it'll be barely there. That's my point, is that these are such a smaller scope, people are still begging for new, and they're trying to get through the gaps.
An interesting line, Larry. Let's turn to Stacey, because Stacey, obviously, as a producer, and I was interested, of course, in your work with documentary, and we talked about your work in terms of the David Arquette documentary and so on. There's a parallel between, obviously, Larry's The Con of Wrath system. But for the moment, Stacey, have you got any questions you want to put to either Matthew, Larry, Robin, or Jessica?
Not the most versed Trek person. That's the problem.
Have to be Star Trek related. I mean, there's a whole range of things on that basis. Obviously, it's Larry's part of this particular thing, but we can go on that. I mean, do you feel bereft of Trek at present, or is it a case of, well, that's what online streaming is for?
Oh, no. I think that anything that has such an impact and the following is, you know, beyond incredible. You know, I think this should always be, as long as the product stays in line or tries to exceed what the original, you know, I say keep churning that stuff out, because, you know, the fans are so, there's just such a huge fan base for that world. I mean, you know, there's certain shows or films that I wish, you know, could go on in other ways, but, you know, they end ultimately. But, you know, with like a Star Wars or a Star Trek or something like that, you know, they can just kind of keep going perpetually. Well,
as you know, Stacey, from previous Zoomers that we've actually had, personally, I think it's high time we had a Can't Stop the Music revival, but that's another line entirely.
Yes, I think it is time for more Can't Stop the Music. Anything that has about, I mean, okay, there you go, like Superman, you know, Superman, same kind of a world. They keep on, you know, Superman's always going to be around in some form or another, you know, because, you know, the fans deserve it. And it's just such a rich character, and it could go on, you know, forever. We should have more Can't Stop the Music in this world, I think.
Yeah.
I said, young man, pick yourself off the ground. I said, young man, 'cause you're in a new town. There's no need to be unhappy, young man. There's a place you can go. I said, young man, when you're short on your dough, you can stay there. And I'm sure you will find many ways to have a good time.
I said I was down and out with the blues. I felt no man cared if I were alive. I felt the whole world was so jive. That's when someone came up to me and said, young man, take a walk up the street. There's a place there called the YMCA. They can start you back on your way. Oh, it's fun to stay at the YMCA. It's fun to stay at the YMCA. Young man, there's no need to feel down. Young man, pick yourself off the ground.
That's something I wanted to get to, and Robin, I'm sure, will actually confirm his line in terms of, you know, what's not to love when you have YMCA actually in a YMCA. It's amazing, you know, it's great. Larry, I don't think we've actually had a notion of Lower Decks as yet set in a musical version, although it's only a matter of time. But talk to us about this line we discussed about in terms of continuity, the line in the latest edition of Star Trek magazine, because it has opened up that can of worms. I mean, I'm tempted to say, does it really matter? Can Trek not use the DC Comics version of, well, it's just a multiverse, it's just different sort of sources going on at this particular place?
Isn't that what they did with the Kelvin films?
Well, it is. And they did, the Kelvins was strategic. I mean, at the time, I remember thinking, why are we wasting time with this? But okay, fine. But at the time, if the alternative was for when J.J. Abrams just came in, if it had been, oh, let's just reboot this because that's what we do. I mean, the Kelvins really shed light or forced me to look at Star Trek in a different way. And there are so many of the big franchises out there, and the way media shifted, and now the movie studios are all interested in their big, their tentpole franchises and how they do globally, and all that shifted in the 10 years since, you know, the Next Gen films were going, and Star Trek pioneered all this, a multiverse with two series and a movie series. You know, it was a small one, but it was the beginnings of something that really hadn't existed before. And then while Star Trek was away from the table, the other big players all jumped in, and, you know, led by Marvel and DC, and Star Wars finally retconned and did something besides movies and started having animated series, and then now live action, even with Mandalorian finally. But everybody else has taken what Star Trek did and made it even bigger, all while Star Trek was at its fallow time. And now Star Trek, who pioneered everything and was the granddaddy, and yes, I know Doctor Who was there, but the Americans taught the Brits how to market it. That's what I always say. But
Star Trek, I'm outnumbered, like, Larry, so I'm not going to get any argument from me.
But it's like Star Trek is reinventing, not reinventing, Star Trek has come back to the table that it invented. Part of that was also complicated by the CBS Viacom divorce when they split, which was ungodly, and now they've come back, which natural, but they're having to find their way back. And the notion of a new Trek movie is up in the air, and are they doing one, are they not? Yes, we are, we're just assessing.
What is Emma Watts thinking? What's her thing? Does she really want to get rid of Alex Kurtzman? It's all inner political stuff, basically.
Well, it's political, it's like people knowing each other, it's like, you know, it's you can look at the old ways and things are bigger now, but a lot of everything is still the same pretty much. Like, what's catching on? What will they risk money on in a movie versus what's a known quantity, you know?
Here's one for the team, basically, and we'll kick off, I'll say, with Matthew in this. Last week, Matthew, of course, thrilling sort of assignment of Fast and Furious based in Watford. How about citing the next Star Trek movie in Watford? Do you think that would be a goer? I mean, you're the designer. What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, it'd be wonderful. I mean, I'm actually working on Avenue 5 at the minute, which is in Watford. We've got Ethan Phillips in the cast. So it's almost, I can sit there and go, I can imagine this could happen. But unfortunately, Watford's bereft of the kind of usual kind of desert vineyard kind of locations Trek tends to use. I don't think a shopping centre tends to really do the look, does it? So we're missing those kind of typical Star Trek kind of go-to locations.
I think there's been a shopping centre in Star Trek Voyager. I'm sure I've seen...
It probably was, yeah. I think the pilot was in a shopping centre.
Shopping centre of the week, maybe. You know.
And of course, you know, the return of David Arquette in WWF wrestling, also in Watford. I'm just thinking of ways in which we could actually coalesce these things together. It's a thought. Maybe I'm just sort of shooting the breeze here. Jessica, questions from yourself. Any thoughts for either Larry, Matthew, or indeed Robin, or indeed Stacey?
I'd actually say maybe Larry. I think Stacey kind of touched on this by talking about the impact that Star Trek has. Why do you think it has such staying power that it's transcending generations and keeps having these reincarnations?
Well, there's, you know, it's not so cool now visually. I mean, it is in a way, but there's pendulum swings. It's in and out of being. You know, when Next Generation was at its height, it was passé 60s, and then when the next generation started, you know, oh, they've got a counselor, they've got a therapist on the bridge and carpet on the walls, and it's so 80s. And the original series was retro cool. That was the buzzword. And that's when J.J. Abrams said, hey, let's go back to that. We'll revitalize this franchise, which didn't really need revitalizing, but that was the thought at the time. And now it's you know, now younger viewers are looking at the original series with really jaundiced eyes at times, which is bizarre. But that's one thing, Alec and everybody, that I think is interesting, is how the more it goes on and the more generations we have that are affected by different eras, people are now looking at all different eras with new eyes. And then, again, the original series is being looked at and, you know, and go, Kirk is a sexist. And I just have seen a lot of people even reluctantly saying, oh, I can't. There's a faction of newer fandom that love anything else, but they said they have a hard time watching the 60s because their culturalization is the last 10 years. So I don't know, Jessica, if that resonates at all, if you wince down, but yeah, it's had an effect. It's, you know, affected everybody from scientists and astronauts to politicians and psychologists and teachers and up and down the line. So it's obviously had an impact, and the core Roddenberry vision of, you know, diversity and aspirationalism and rationality and a team that works together, even if they start off broken, they find their way together now, which is the current way to dress it up.
Everything effectively that's currently missing from the White House, really, which is extraordinary, but there we are.
It was sort of fascinating that, because I remember when DS9 came out, there was this whole thing that it was much darker and much more realistic than TNG, because TNG was very kind of pious and quite optimistic and not how the world really worked. But at this point, I think a lot of people find that people watch TNG now to kind of get a taste of the utopia, which we've now lost completely. And Discovery and Picard take place in a world where the institutions, so Starfleet, that's, I think, are less trustworthy compared to how they were. So it's reflecting modern times, which in a way I'm not really enjoying that much because things are quite dark right now. So I find myself going back to a series that was considered passé 10 years ago because of the vision that kind of predicts the future where, you know, things are fine, and you know, and the science is kind of the key driving thing behind humanity and you know, truth and all that sort of thing. So it's really weird how, like you said, they kind of go out of fashion, but they come back in different ways. And I think the optimism of the kind of the really strong blind optimism almost of TNG is kind of actually what we need at the minute.
Thank you.
really see, impressed as well.
Lower Decks has that. Yeah, and the Pike show is going to be... Hang on for the Pike show. That's supposed to be where that goes.
That's the Pike show as opposed to the Picard show. And indeed, for anybody who's just tuned in, the Pike show is not a kind of Angling Today system. It's not about fishing. It's actually about Captain Christopher Pike, one of the captains of the USS Enterprise, not to be confused with Robert April, of course, who was the first captain of the USS Enterprise.
Right. Technically, Strange New Worlds. So there we go. Like, it hasn't been out yet. A lot of people may not be up with that, but yeah.
I've got to say, Matthew, I'm very impressed with the background there. You've also got a next-generation design on a laptop screen there. Was that just sort of at this moment you thought, I've got to go there, I've got to put this design online?
It's actually not a laptop. It's a replica of Picard's desktop monitor, which I helped do some design work on for Roddenberry a couple of years ago. So it's I thought I'd make an effort and dig it out for the show.
This is deeply impressive. In fact, it's almost as impressive as Louis Savvy promising that when we review Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, he's going to bring out his model of the Seaview submarine as well. Nice. It's amazing. Stacey, back to yourself again. Have you had any thoughts about any overall question you'd like to put to the team?
I do have a question. Star Trek related, documentary related. What did you guys think for The Love of Spock?
Absolutely loved it. That was a worthy tribute, directed by Adam Nimoy. I'd read, you know, I am Spock, I am not Spock, but the documentary I felt was a heartfelt tribute to an often underestimated performer. Because people just thought of him as the guy with the ears, didn't they?
Excellent. Larry, your thoughts?
Oh, no, it was a marvelous documentary, biography, and it had, you know, more than one level. It wasn't just relentlessly, oh, Leonard, he's so great. It was, you got into his background, which a lot of people didn't focus on until the last year or two of his life. The last convention circuit he didn't even talk about Star Trek. He just did a slideshow of his life and went back to his roots and growing up. He was Russian Jewish, and his immigrant parents, and his dad was a barber, and all of this from the Boston area. And it explained a lot, and people forgot how he kind of sat on it, but how progressive he was and how he embraced a lot of progressive liberal causes. But it was part biography of him, but it was also Adam's story as a son. And there was a lot of personal put into that, and about how they were estranged for a while. And Adam's trying to, you know, anytime you're the son or daughter of a really huge, not just celebrity, but an icon, it's really hard for the offspring to find their way sometimes. Mm-hmm. And he talks about that struggle. And I knew when his dad got him a gig when directing, when he had gone to law school, and then he was going to try to be a director and was trying to find himself. And I love that in the show too, that there's a segment where he's talking about just his relationship with his father. But no, it's a wonderful documentary.
If only Leonard had actually allowed his son, Adam, to take part with the Shatner children in Miri, it would have been a whole new world, but never mind. It's a different line. Matthew, have you seen For the Love of Spock as yet?
I haven't, no, unfortunately. Much to my shame.
It's worth accessing it, and likewise, Jessica as well. Larry, there's a lot of other stuff to actually go into, but very briefly, Star Trek Day. Now, unlike the DC fandom, which Robin and myself attended the full 8 hours, which we thought was fantastic, Star Trek Day seemed to kind of evaporate. I know William Shatner, not a big fan of Star Trek Day. How did you feel yourself it kind of went? Because clearly it was designed to kind of promote interest in Trek and so on.
Well, I thought it went really well, and it was kind of an historic. I mean, when I was a kid, we knew the anniversary. We'd say, "Hey, happy Star Trek anniversary!" And you know, it's increasingly become a thing. But this is the first time the studio jumped in to that degree, and you know, thank you COVID, thank you Zoom world. I mean, this is where we are. But it was an historic leap up for the studio to come in and invest that kind of time. And I mean, they've recently upped the team. They've got a social media team now, and so they had the bandwidth literally to do it. But yeah, and I don't want to keep harping on the Pike show, but Strange New World, they had as many writers as they did actors. They had four actors. Of course, they haven't announced the full cast yet. But to see a lot of those writers given a face and a name, when Akiva Goldsman to now was the only one people had known. And there's one, I loved it. It's my favorite of all the day, because they all got beklempt at one point and talked about what Star Trek meant to. It was obviously they were fanboys and fangirls. Oh. And it really told you, it just whetted your appetite even more for what's to come. and people are hungry. I mean, I predicted when people were complaining about how these new shows were all dystopian and dark, and does everybody have to be broken looking for the light and all of that? And I said, guys, let them have 6 or 7 shows, and all of a sudden that radical, crazy new mission every week, and everybody's a bright, happy, shining crew on a bright, happy, shining ship. That'll be a radical new format again. And that's kind of what's happened. So, you know, it's like they've got all this out of their system and nobody's worried about looking like Game of Thrones or Walking Dead, and dystopia may be finally passe again as the pendulum swings. So,
mind you, you know, yeah,
they were great all day long.
Game of Thrones, Can't Stop the Music, and Star Trek, and Fast and Furious in Watford. I mean, it could happen. I just put it out there. Possibility. Multi sort of routine for that. I finally, at this stage, before we, because time is again sort of moving in different sort of lines, Larry, in the series Resonance Rewind, which hopefully you'll join us in the not too distant future, I've had a bit of a disagreement with Robin Pierce about this, because I have changed one of the Star Trek titles. And for the next routine, this is obviously critical for Jessica as well, I have actually opted for Assignment Earth, final episode of season 2, as opposed to another season 2 episode, Return to Tomorrow. Robin, big fan of one. The other one, thumbs down all the way. Which one would you have gone for?
And this is for what? What's the
this point? This is for a show, basically, where we review all old-time classics, single-episode classics and so on, of TV shows and movies and such like.
Well, Assignment Earth is good if you're in a TV class, because it's a backdoor pilot. And that's why it's interesting there. I think, I always wonder if it's like Gene was ripping off Doctor Who. He was going to have a time traveler and a companion, so, you know, solve crisis. It was almost like a UNIT era, like a John Pertwee era.
Yeah, yeah. And Return to Tomorrow?
Return to Tomorrow. We're talking about Eret and Sargon.
Sargon.
Yes, yeah. Have no fear. Sargon's here.
Risk. Risk is our business.
Business. See, that's
it. That's why we're aboard her.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it used the whole cast, certainly. It got Chapel even in there.
You're sitting on the fence, Larry. Which one would you go for?
One of Shatner's most impassioned speeches.
Sorry?
One of Shatner's most impassioned speeches.
Yeah. Yes, yes. I guess I would say, I'm still not sure what the stakes are here, but the Return to Tomorrow, I guess.
Oh. Well, we're going with Assignment Earth anyway. Let's move on to another whole thing. Don't worry, Robin. We'll come back to Return to Tomorrow later. We need to astonishingly just ask those last two questions. Jessica, I'm going to put you in charge of asking them to the team. Over to you, please, Jessica.
All right, everyone. Have you all had a reasonably interesting Zoomer link today?
I have, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yes.
Yep, absolutely.
I think even Laurel and Hardy are nodding in the background of Stacey there. So, you know, crazy. They've come to life. And Larry, very impressed, obviously, with the Star Trek 4 poster in the background there and all the details you got there in terms of Trekland, etc. It's been awesome. So the next question, Jessica, is?
Will you all be joining us again?
Goodness me, yes.
No. Affirmative. Yeah.
I'm always tempted to go acknowledge. Was that a yes from yourself as well, Stacey?
It was a yes.
Genius. This is it. Well, stay safe, everybody. In fact, you said Laurel and Hardy. We could actually do a whole show, literally, on the collectibles you've got behind you, Stacey. It's very impressive.
What have you been missing all these years, Alex?
I'm going to show you one thing before we sign off. There's I could have been over here next to the monkey in the Superman outfit.
Wow.
That was the monkey from Pee-wee. Pee-wee's Big Adventure. There's a lot going on here. There's Porpy, a porpoise, a little... It's crazy here.
Whoa. I mean, this is writing next week's show, Stacey. I mean, just a wandering through. I mean, take that, William Sitwell, and your tour through the family manor. It's awesome, though. A monkey in a Superman suit. I mean, wow. I think if Alex Kurtzman is...
When can I move in?
If you watch Pee-wee's Big Adventure, it's in front of the magic shop, but it's in a tux then.
Is that the screen used? Is that the one?
Yeah, it's actually from Paul. It was Paul's, like David and Paul are really good friends. So Paul gave it to him. I'm pretty sure it's the one that was in the movie, unless Paul just had a bunch of them. But it is. But yeah, it used to wave. Like if you see the one in the movie, it's doing the whole thing. So
Stacey Souther, ace producer and actor. Matthew Clark, ace designer. Larry Nemechek, fantastic writer and author, of course, of the Star Trek technology. Oh, no, the Star Trek data core. And, of course, host of the Star Trek podcast. And Jessica Burtis, ace student from North Carolina. And Robin Pierce, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. And happy trails.
Bye.
Thanks very much.
Hi, this is Jean Bruce Scott
and Randy Reinholz.
And when we're not busily producing some of the most outstanding Native American theater in Los Angeles,
we always like to check out the best of British audio adventures with Alex Lefchuk and his team of the Midweek Drive.
And Midweek Drive morning editions on Siren FM.
And Southside Broadcasting.podbean.com.